Good evening and welcome to a very special edition of Midwest Beat. That's right, it's Monday. I'm not usually on the dial, but tonight we have a special guest. I've got Isaac Slade of the band The Fray. The Fray are coming to town on November 11th at Chicago Theater for a 7 o'clock show. That's this Friday at 7 p.m. So we made a space in tonight's programming to feature this very special interview with Isaac Slade to talk about The Fray's new album called The Best of The Fray Through the Years. You'll not only be hearing a few favorites from the band's playlist, but also three brand new songs just released and recorded for this new album. So, without any further ado, let's get going. But let's start things off with an old favorite of mine. Going back in time a few years, this one's off their album, How to Save a Life. I'll have Isaac on the phone after this one. So, heaven forbid, don't go anywhere. Midwest Beat returns after this.
You're falling apart and tearing at the seams. Heaven forbid you end up alone. You don't know why. Hold on tight, wait for tomorrow, you'll be alright.
Called Heaven Forbid. It's off the Fray's album, How to Save a Life. I'm Tom Lounges here with a special edition of Midwest Beat featuring my guest, Isaac Slade, lead singer, piano player, founder, and songwriter of The Fray. They've got a brand new album out called Through the Years, The Best of the Fray. Hey, Isaac.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Doing just fine. Thank you for being part of tonight's show as you make your way toward Chicago. What's it like to know that you guys have finally scored enough charted songs, enough commercial success to warrant a greatest hits album? How does that feel for you?
Oh, man. It feels a little bit like when I got that phone call, like, it's time for your high school reunion. I was like, oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. It's a bittersweet thing that, you know, in some ways I've kept my eye on every time we make a record. You know, I didn't think of it as the greatest hits. I thought of it as like a box set, because I buy box sets of my favorite artists, and I look at them all the time. I have a Beatles box set. I have a Springsteen box set. I got a Radiohead box set. I have a Tori Amos box set. And I look at them, you know, every week, just thinking like, okay, where am I in my career? And it's hard to make box sets these days.
Right, right.
Physically. So I think this is that for me, that it's pretty damn close to the box set thing. And it is. It's a bittersweet, beautiful, kind of haunting endeavor.
Could you have imagined that you would get to this point when you first started out in Colorado?
Mostly no. Mostly 87% of my thinking is very realistic that, you know, there's a 1 in 1,000 chance that you can actually get a chance to even try out for a record label. And then from there, there's a 1 in 50 chance that you actually get it. And then once you get signed, there's a 90% chance you're going to do one record and go home. So I've been doing the numbers all along, every step of the way. Even the second record, I thought, okay, we're probably not going to make it now. And every step of the way, you know, I'm surprised. But I think there's a 10 to 13% part of me that is still 8 years old, thinking like, yeah, why not, man? This is good. Dream big. Let's chase the Phoenix and see where it takes us.
12 songs on the album Through the Years, The Best of the Fray. Three are new, and the others are older songs, being as it is a greatest hits. How involved were you in the picking of the songs and sequencing?
What's the last thing?
How involved were you personally, or the group personally, in picking the songs and the sequencing of them?
Pretty involved, actually. The label chimed in, for sure, on what they thought would need to be on the record, and then they kind of left us with the rest of it to kind of pick what kind of vibe we wanted. So I'd say it was probably 60-40 us.
Okay. All right. Listening back to all the old songs, which ones would you say you're most proud of, and why? If you have to pick a favorite of the favorites.
Man alive. I think I'm probably split. How to Save a Life is still the one I think I marvel at the most, that I'm the most surprised by, that I've had people come up and say, I mean, you would not believe the things that people have said to me. Like, I had one girl come up to me, actually in Chicago, outside of the theater, I think, Chicago Theater, before we played there last time, and she said, hey, sorry, I've never met you before. I just want to let you know that I was about to kill myself, and your song came on, and I decided to get up and keep living. And then she left. And I was just frozen in my tracks. I still can't wrap my head around that. And then I've had other people come up and say, hey, I love How to Save Life. It was our wedding song. We did.
Wow.
And everything in between. So in some ways, you know, I feel like a priest, that people just come up to me with the anonymity and also the intimacy that they have from listening, and confess their darkest stories to me. And I think a lot of that's because of that song.
Wow, that's pretty sobering to know that you have that kind of effect on people with what you write.
It is, man. And to be honest, it kind of messed me up early on. I used to think that was my job, to sort of save people. And ironically, the core of that song is the message that you can't.
Right.
So, once we wrote it, it took me about 5 years to actually take what I needed from the song and sort of let people do that with me and not take it on. But yeah, it kind of crushed me for a while.
All right, let's play that song now. For those that haven't heard it, this is How to Save a Life. More with Isaac Slade of The Fray when we return.
Step one, you say we need to talk. He walks, you say sit down, it's just talk. He smiles politely back at you. You stare politely right on through. Some sort of window to your right. As he goes left and you stay right. Between the lines, fear and blame. You begin to wonder why you came. Where did I go wrong? I lost a friend somewhere along in the bitterness. And I would have stayed up with you all night. Yet I know how to save a life. Let him know. Past his defense without granting innocence. Lay down a list of what is wrong, things you told him all along. Pray to God he hears you, and pray to God he hears you. And where did I go wrong? I lost a friend somewhere along in the bitterness.
How to Save a Life, a song that literally did save a life. Isaac just shared that story with us. Isaac Slade of The Fray is my guest here on Midwest Beat. And Isaac, let's talk about the songwriting some more. I understand you and Joe King of the band tend to write most of the songs. How has your dynamic, your methods shifted over the course of your several albums?
Yeah, I think they've gotten more collaborative, actually, and we've sort of gone with the flow, I think, of the industry, that people have realized, you know, they actually had something going there in the 50s and 60s when there was people that were just writing all the time, and you can see maybe a little difference. Back in the day, Aretha would sort of walk in and sing what was on the page,
mm-hmm.
co-written by a couple people, and now I think it's a little more, the artists can sit with some other writers. So it's kind of a lot more collaborative on the fourth record. We opened it up to writing with other people. And on the third record and fourth record, Joe and I started writing a lot more with our other two bandmates, Dave and Ben. And I think we kind of discovered these amazing writers within the ranks that I don't know if I had the maturity to really stay open to on those first two records, and I wish I had. But yeah, I listened to the third and fourth record and these new songs on the fifth record, and I'm able to hear all four of us a lot clearer.
Your first two records seem to draw, as you mentioned, it seemed like you were the primary force on that. It seemed to draw a lot from your personal background with the church and coming from a family of missionaries. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, the blessing and the curse of growing up in a religious environment is it kind of comes with a built-in community and a group of people that know you and can kind of it's a little bit of the small town effect that you know you got to stay out, you tend to stay out of trouble because so and so is going to tell your mom and also the blessing was like I learned early on that music is more than selling yourself, it's more than just kind of getting popularity, it's about impacting lives. And on a really musically technical level, it has to be simple enough for everybody to sing at the same time. Otherwise, it's just kind of you in your basement, which is weird.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was in my DNA as a creative. That you know, these songs, even if we write every word and every note, they don't belong to us. They belong to the people. And I love, you know, we played a show a couple nights ago, and I love looking out, taking my in-ear monitors out, see it. I tipped the mic to the crowd on over my head, and all these people from like 6 to 60 were singing at the top of their lungs, and every single one of those people looked so different and diverse across the map. It looked like I was staring at the UN, and I still can't wrap my head around that, but I think that's one of the reasons that we've gotten to this point where we have sing-alongs that we all grew up in church, you know, with songs that everybody sang.
Mm-hmm. So it is a community effort, both creatively and the payback for it.
Absolutely.
This is Over My Head. This is The Fray. More with Isaac Slade, and we return on Midwest Beat.
I never knew that everything was falling through, that everyone I knew was waiting on a cue to turn and run when all I needed was the truth. But that's how it's gotta be. It's coming down to nothing more than apathy. I'd rather run the other way than stay and see. Don't last. I'm losing you, and it's everything. knows I'm in over my head, over my hip. 8 seconds left in overtime. She's on your mind, she's on your mind.
Over my head, that's the Fray. Isaac Slade, vocalist, pianist, songwriter, you name it, of the band. He is our guest today. Isaac, you studied songwriting at University of Colorado. What is the best thing that you learned from a formal class as opposed to real-world writing?
Yeah, college gave me a lot of stuff. I think I learned the power of networking there, of that relationships matter so much more than people tell you. I also learned, I think from my actual studies of songwriting, that there is a form to it, that there's an art to it. And you listen to Beethoven or whatever, and yes, he was a freaking genius. He was a giant. He stood higher than everybody else. But he was following a form, like a songwriting form, just like Jimi Hendrix did. And I think that a lot of people fail to see that. A lot of aspiring musicians fail to see that. They think these geniuses sat down and just like popped out a song, and actually they're borrowing, I don't care who you name from the Hall of Fame, they all borrowed from the people before them, and some more than others, some less than others, but everybody is growing up listening to the form and then building on it and progressing on it. And when you look at the mass of pop music from the 1700s to today, you definitely see enough variety to think it comes out of nowhere. But if you really look closely, you can connect the dots from Bach to Jay-Z.
In your opinion, what are the elements of a great song as both a writer and a performer?
That's a good question, man. I think one of the key elements that a lot of people fail to really capture is universalism in the lyric and in the kind of approach to it. A lot of songs hit huge and then they're gone 6 weeks later or 16 weeks later. Or even 16 years later, they don't last more than a couple decades. And the ones that really do, I think the writer was able to sort of smell the wind and see what was actually going on, what had come, what was broken, what was coming, and kind of capture their time. So you listen to Sound of Silence or something from Paul Simon and Garfunkel that they captured a time and a place. So I think, you know, it has to be universal. And then I think on some metaphysical level, it has to be true to the person that's singing it. If it's not, everybody knows. Maybe they don't even know right away, but when you see somebody doing something that's not real to them, it just shows, and the public knows it.
You had mentioned there was a couple of new songs on the album. Singing Low is one of those, and it was released about a month ago as an advanced single. How's that done for you, both online and at radio?
I hate to tell you this, but I have no idea. We have a wonderful, talented people who track all that stuff and act accordingly and allow us to really stay in the creative place. But I think we've been playing it at the shows, and I think it's been going over really well. It's always hard with a new song because it's like, you know, you have a really well-established group of people. It feels like each song feels like a person, and then a brand new person shows up. It throws off the whole dynamic, and everybody's like trying to get to know them, their standoffish. So far, it's been tracking. I think we got a couple million spins on Spotify, and I think we got probably 30 or 40 radio stations playing around the country. So
excellent.
So far, so good.
Words are falling on our skin. Water torture. You get your man.
That's the new single from The Fray, Singing Low. And my guest today is lead singer Isaac Fray, also the keyboardist and songwriter of the band. Isaac, you guys are coming to Chicago this weekend, and you mentioned that's just one of a few new songs on this brand new Best Of album. So with a few new songs now out there to whet their appetites, when might fans of The Fray expect a new full studio album from the group?
Good question, man. We have a batch of songs that these three came from, and I don't know what's going to happen with them. I they'll either find their way to the light of day, or we might end up chasing a new batch or something else. I don't know. But I know for now, these three songs are really cool. They represent sort of a tripod of the past and the future for us. Singing Low is kind of a groovy, laid-back, kind of sultry drum beat song. And then Corners is a big old power ballady kind of thing that kind of reminds me of our fourth record. We worked with the same producer on that, as we did in our fourth record. And then Changing Tides, third new song, and it's got a really interesting feel for us. I think it's a new space, ultra, ultra simple, really, really super simple, and just kind of says it like it is. And I think we in the band, we've obsessed over subtlety and nuance so much. I think it was really nice to kind of let loose a little bit and just call it like we see it.
It was the sight to see. I'm holding what I love, and she's holding on to me. It's no surprise it brought me to my knees. You're never really ready, as ready as can be. The sun's coming up, we were sifting through the sand, looking for the pieces of our broken plans. It's gonna take a while, I'm gonna get it. Carry on, darling, a little bit to the last. Changing tides, baby, that's the
got to see. I'm holding what I love, and she's holding on to me. It's gonna take a while, it's gonna come back. We gotta carry on, darling. We were built to last.
Changing Tides, new music from The Fray, featured on their brand new release, The Best Of Through the Years. The Fray are coming to Chicago on November 11th. Isaac Slade is my guest here on this special edition of Midwest Beat. Isaac, on the other side, we had talked a bit about producers, and speaking of producers, on the Scars and Stories album, you recruited Brendan O'Brien, who, of course, has worked with everybody, including Pearl Jam, Springsteen, Chris Cornell. How and why did you come to work with Brian, and will we see a collaboration there again?
We loved working with him. He was the mastermind behind a number of our favorite records when we were growing up, you know, in the 90s and in the early 2000s coming onto the scene. His name was on the back of some of our favorite records, and we really chased him down to see if we could kind of live out that dream of ours to capture that huge drum kit sound that he's famous for, and he's really good with guitars too. And we liked his production style. It's a little more laid back in certain ways. Like, he mixes it as well. Usually you get it exactly like you want the tracks, and then you send it to a mixer, and the mixer kind of does his own thing with it. And it was really interesting to us to work with somebody that does both, because he mixed as he went. So we got to see the final product come to shape before our very eyes, rather than getting it along the line and then kind of letting it go. So we had a little more control, a little more involved with it, and we got to work with a legend. But yeah, Brendan's great.
Yeah, he gave you a real rock sound on that one, more so than some of the other albums. And I think that's got to be my personal favorite as an overall album from your collection.
Hey, thank you, man. I love that. Yeah, I think the drummer might high-five you right now.
Going back to that album right now from Scars and Stories, this is Heartbeat. More with Isaac on the other side. Stay with us.
Oh, you got a fire and it's burning in the rain.
going back a few years, a song called Heartbeat off the Scars and Stories album, that is The Fray. Isaac Slade, the lead singer, piano player, and chief songwriter of the group, is my guest on Midwest Beat. Isaac and the band are coming to Chicago on November 11th, and they've got a brand new Best Of album out. Isaac, let's talk a little bit about the current tour behind the Greatest Hits album through the years. How long will you guys be out on the road, and is it strictly North America, or are you hitting the other continents?
We're going to play it by ear. We're just focusing on these 7 week shows back here in the fall. International in the Toronto is on the bill since, but other than that, it's all U.S.
Okay.
And we got a few Christmas shows and stuff after that in December, but yeah, we're really just trying to kind of be in the moment and see what happens with the songs, and we'll put out a second single probably. We're going to put the record out next week, I think, probably Thursday or Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And then just kind of take it from there. We've sort of always done that. We come up with loose plans, and then we kind of just wait and see what happens. It's a lot like hunting.
All right. You have a family now in recent years, so the dynamic of your personal life has changed since you first started the band. I imagine that's emotionally difficult to head out for long periods on the road. Now, how do you balance Isaac the rock star and Isaac the family man?
Oh, man, that's such a great question. Nobody ever asks me about that stuff, and it's probably the thing I think about the most. I heard some advice about marriage, actually, that most people think, you know, if there's problems in the marriage, it's the other person's fault. It's kind of the cliche sort of, well, if my spouse just wasn't like this, or my girlfriend just wasn't like this, it'd be fine. And this therapist actually told my wife, like, the way it works is any close relationship, but especially one where you're living together, ends up being an x-ray machine. It's like an MRI for who you are and for who they are. But really, if there's conflict, easy to blame it on the other person, and really hard to actually figure out why it's happening, because usually it's a lot of it is you and who you are. When I started viewing marriage like that, it flipped my world upside down. And I think being in a band is something close to that, where there's four of us and we are close. We are closer than we'd like to be sometimes, but we are close as it gets. Business partners for 13, 14 years, who also sort of sleep at the office under our desks next to each other as the bus drives down the road. And it's so much easier to just kind of blame the other band, sort of blame, circumstances or something. And really, at the end of the day, it's a truth serum, man, to be close to people and to have them be close enough to you that they can call you on your stuff. I think it has been the source of the greatest balance for me, having those three guys and having my wife and having a few friends who aren't afraid to call it like they see it. And when I'm out on the road, standing in front of a crowd, they're cheering based on, who I am for sure, but it's a small part of who I am. It's maybe 10-15% of who I am. And they don't know the other stuff.
Right.
They don't know when I'm a total jackass, and they don't get to see that. So it's been a lifeblood for me to have those handful of nine or so relationships probably that it's a black light to figure out.
Right.
So I really am coming home from a tour feeling like a demigod. It brings a lot of reality.
Speaking of family, is this something that's in the genes for you? How did you come to music? Are you from a musical family? When did this all start, this path?
I do come from a musical family. My dad's side of the family are sort of the pub singer, square dance folks, the English, who are, my grandfather was just bold as a guy who'd stand up in the middle of the nursing home or Denny's or church and just sing. He'd be like, let me sing you a song and stand up and sing. And then my mom's side was more of the kind of the Norwegian, sophisticated, classically trained. My grandma was a piano player and an oboist and a cellist and all this stuff. And her dad was a really, really talented organ player. And they all kind of studied the art of it. So I have both in my blood. My mom is a really good singer and she plays piano. And then all my brothers, they're so good. They're like better than me at piano, and we all sing. So yeah, it's definitely a little Von Trappy around there.
Well, when did you decide this is going to be your career? When did you know that entertaining and writing and singing was the career path for you?
I think with careers, with anything, you kind of just listen to your ear on the train track to see if you can kind of hear hints of things coming. And I had other ideas of things I wanted to do, kind of always in the context of kind of backup plans to music. I wanted to get into engineering and thinking about maybe business or something. But music has pretty much been my thing since I was 8. That was the first time I really started like journaling about what if this is my job? What if I can chase this and make it my 9 to 5 or my 5 to 9, I guess.
Yeah, that's more like it.
Yeah, been chasing it ever since.
If you just tuned in, my guest is Isaac Slade of the band The Fray. Let's take a little break now and go back to their album, How to Save a Life. This one's called Little House. I'll be back one more time with Isaac after this.
She doesn't look, she doesn't see, opens up for nobody, figures out, she figures out, narrow lines, she can't decide, everything short of suicide, never hurts.
It's called Little House off the album How to Save a Life, going back a few years with The Fray. Isaac Slade, the lead singer, piano player, and songwriter of The Fray, is my guest this evening on this special edition of Midwest Beat. The Fray are coming to Chicago November 11th. Coming from Colorado, the home of old hippies and jam bands, how hard was it for you to establish the group? A piano-driven band, I imagine, was pretty unique in that area.
Yeah, we had a hard time, to be honest. It was a pretty well-known scene for cover bands, a lot of sports bars, a lot of artists, really good musicians just logging away and bars where everybody's yelling for Freebird and you play an original and the place just clears out. So there was a lot of obstacles to overcome in Denver. And then this funny thing happened. I don't know exactly why or when, but somewhere in 2000, 2001, 2002, maybe 2003, we got a new mayor, and he just started joining the conversation and said, like, one, he was saying a lot in public, and then one time I interviewed him for this TV show I was working on, and he said it to me, and it just knocked me up. We have just as many venues per capita as Austin. We have more venues per capita than Nashville. Why can't we be the music scene? Why do we have to just be a sports scene? Why can't we do it? Mm-hmm. He was like pointing at me, and it challenged my whole way of thinking, you know, because it's so easy to think like, oh, well, somebody else will do it. And it just kicked my butt. I thought, oh, don't know why. It should be us. We can do this. And, you know, that was a pivotal moment for me. I kind of started playing shows with a whole new confidence and a whole new promoting the shows with a whole new enthusiasm because I thought maybe we could make it. And then this really cool thing happened where I think that plus 100 other factors, just a really good music editor at the newspaper called The Westword, another really good music writer at the Denver Post, Ingrid Baca, and a lot of people just started turning the music scene's attention on itself and mm-hmm. noticing, like teaching it to notice how big it is. And then it started connecting, and then this momentum took off. And the next thing you know, within a span of 5 years, there was at least 5 or 6 major label signings from there, from this band. And yeah, a lot of our friends, Lumineers came out of there, even some of the Warner Public guys from, you know, Denver, Colorado Springs area. And it just, this very, very cool thing started happening, like a tipping point style in 04, 05, 06, 07, that I think had its roots in, you know, the Big Head Todds and mm-hmm. the Nina Stories and all these people that played around town for decades, literally, and it finally popped.
Is there anything we haven't discussed, Isaac, that you'd like to let people know about yourself, the band, the tour?
You know, I think maybe the last thing I'd say is just my, like, one of the things I'm the most proud of is happening right now, where we have managed to stay present in whatever moment of our career we're in. And I think more so than even we used to be. We're getting more and more present and more understanding as a band of each other. Like, the relationships are getting, like, tighter. And a lot of times as bands, especially age, it goes the opposite direction.
Right, right.
Become more and more checked out, more and more distant, more and more separate. And I think the shows reflect that presence, that moment-to-moment awareness that we are, you know, we're still four guys and our really, really cool bass player plays with us. We're five guys that can step on stage and connect and create a moment for an hour and a half that will never happen again. And that's been, like, one of the highlights of my life, really, to be able to create those moments all over the world.
Thank you so much. Isaac Slade of The Fray coming to Chicago on November 11th. They'll be here. Go see him.
All right. Take care. Thanks for the interview, man. That was great.
You're very welcome. Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Chief. Happy.
I've got that third and final new song off The Fray's latest album, Best Of Through the Years, coming up in just a moment. But first, I want to remind you, there will be no Midwest Beat program tomorrow due to Election Day. But I will be back on Wednesday with another Midwest Beat special. I'm Tom Lounges. Join me as I welcome jazz guitar great Larry Coryell to the Lakeshore airwaves. But right now, as we say goodbye, here's that final Fray song. This one's called Corners. Don't forget to get out and vote. Till we meet again. Adios.
Home is where my head lays. On this pillow on your chest. Here is where my heart stays. Even when it's not the best. And I can see all of the lights. And I can see the ugly sides. And it's nice. It's nice. I keep finding, I keep finding something. I keep finding all your corners. I keep finding, I keep finding something. I keep finding all your corners. And it's nice. We are close and personal. Different point of view. Every turn is critical. Walking on the edge of you. I can see all of the lights. And I can see the ugly sides. And it's nice.
Something that keeps finding all your corners. That keeps finding. are you? No matter where the wind may blow, I wanna be there when you're old. I'm falling since you came. Are you? Are you?